Kent State, their name does something for people. When people hear that you're a Kent State grad, they're like, oh yeah, I have a lot of nurses like that. And they're good nurses. They want to hire you because you're from Kent State in their nursing program. They teach the art of nursing. They teach the therapeutic communication. They teach how to really care for the person and not just knowledge. Even when it's hard in classes, even when this is a new adjustment, the school itself has the people and the support that you need to be the best nurse that you can be.
Begin at Kent State University.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Alright, let's go, let's do this podcast. It's going to be an interesting one, folks. This is the Gegenpressing podcast from the Football Grad Network. I'm your host, Manuel Feit. And yeah, Stefan, this will be a good show, I think. We have some really interesting topics that are a little bit different than our usual ones. And yeah, how is it going? Stefan Bienkowski, my usual co-host on this podcast. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, very well. You know, you're right. We don't have any Pokal or Bundesliga football this weekend, but and that did trouble me when I woke up this morning, Monday morning. I usually pull up the fixture list and think, right, what can I get excited about this weekend? Mm-hmm. And there was nothing. And here in Europe, unlike our friends at CONCACAF or in South America or Africa, wherever else, Asia, here in Europe, we don't even have international games. So I couldn't even get excited about maybe a Germany or, dare I say, a Scotland game. But luckily, there is a huge amount of drama going on in the Bundesliga right now. There's a lot to talk about. And I'm really looking forward to just kind of digging into two or three really big topics today.
Yeah, definitely. I think though, before we do the big one, one of the big ones, I think. The Pokal, Stefan, that competition now is completely open. Dortmund gone, Bayern gone. I saw this crazy statistic. It's the first time since, I think, 2006, 2007 that both Bayern and Dortmund are gone at this stage. I have to double check that, so don't radio me on this one. But it's been a while.
I have an even more impressive stat for you than that. The last team... that of all the teams that are left in the competition, I think the last one to have actually won the Pokal was 29 years ago.
Wow. And that was Gladbach? No, Gladbach are out.
I don't even know, actually. I'm going to guess and say Hamburg. So
29 years ago. I have to do my math here in my head. So that would have been
91, 92, I think. 93, possibly. In fact, I can actually check right now. Just do some real-time Googling on this podcast, which is exactly what everyone wants to hear. We're going to have people probably sitting in their car right now saying, you guys are idiots. It's clearly so-and-so. Let's see which one of us can find
Hannover.
Yeah, see, I was right.
And they were in the second division. And they were in the second division at the time.
Oh, God, I'm such an idiot. I just literally said I was right because I thought you said Hamburg there. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't think Hamburg has won anything in a long time. It is really exciting. I think anyone who's still in it, right, from like whether it's Union, Freiburg, Hannover, St. Pauli, Bochum, Hamburg, and Karlsruhe, those are all the underdogs. And then there's Leipzig, who probably are looking at this now and say, ha, we can make a season that started really badly for us look very good at the end of May.
Things are just falling into place for Tedesco. What I thought was quite funny was that I watched the Hamburg derby on Friday, and both of those teams, St. Pauli and Hamburg, looked exhausted. I have no idea why that game wasn't rescheduled. Maybe there's a legitimate reason that I didn't pick up, but to have St. Pauli knock out Dortmund and Hamburg knock out Cologne on the Tuesday and Wednesday night and then play a derby on the Friday night, it's absolute brutal. Madness. And both teams looked exhausted. They still made a really good game of it. Hamburg took the win, but absolutely crazy. But it also showed how much they put into those Pokal games. So it was good to see.
Yeah, and I think those two teams also, I think in both those games, showed why they are where they are in the second Bundesliga standings, right? St. Pauli and Hamburg, I guess both are Hamburg, but you know what I mean, are fighting for promotion, with St. Pauli being, of course, aware first in the second division, and really making a good case for why both those teams are so close. HSV, of course, fifth, 1 point behind their local rivals, Werder Bremen. St. Pauli in second. Schalke is sandwiched between Bremen and HSV. That promotion race is going to be interesting in a lot of ways. And look, HSV and St. Pauli are still in the Pokal, so that's a little bit of a distraction for them, I assume. But they could also play each other, so we could get another Hamburg derby.
And this actually got me thinking the other night, and I actually tweeted about it, which I think is quite an interesting stat. I'll just read it out to our listeners. If Hamburg and Bremen fail to get promoted from the Zweite Bundesliga, and Gladbach and Stuttgart do get relegated from the Bundesliga, there'll be more former Bundesliga winners in the second tier than the top tier. Oh, and on top of that, you could also have Braunschweig and Kaiserslautern come up from the third division. So, and they were obviously previous winners as well. So you could end up having a fair amount of the, you know, German football history's winners playing in the second tier, which would be quite something. I mean, Gladbach in the Zweite Bundesliga would be historic, I think. But we'll see what happens.
It has happened before, of course. I want to point out here, because you're bringing this up, because 1860 last year came very close of rolling up the field from behind. It looks like they're going to do the same thing again this year. Former winner as well, if they go up.
Yep, absolutely. And maybe if they get promoted, I'll finally be able to buy that shirt I've been trying to buy all year.
Yeah,
I should let the listeners know about this. So I've just a brief story here. So 1860 have, I think, is it like a special centenary shirt this year?
Maybe the blue. You mean the dark one, right?
Yeah,
I
think it's just a home shirt, and I was hoping to pick one up just because I like buying cool tops when I see them, but because of bloody Brexit, they don't deliver to the UK anymore. And I think you were going to go through to Germany, but then obviously COVID meant you couldn't go. Mm-hmm. And I've not been able to go through since either. I don't think I'll be able to get out to Germany till April now. But hopefully I'll go to Munich, and hopefully I can just show up at the club's fan shop and buy it with my own two hands.
Fingers crossed. If you're listening to this podcast and you're based in Munich, help the man out.
If you work for 1860 Munich, just message me on Twitter. Let me know.
Yeah, how can we get this? We can get it shipped to my house, and then we'll get it to your house.
It will probably be cheaper to ship it to Vancouver and then to Scotland than from Germany. My girlfriend's a jeweler, and she was telling me yesterday that right now it's cheaper to ship jewelry to Australia from the United Kingdom than it is to ship it to Germany.
Yeah, well, that's the bonuses of Brexit, isn't it? It was supposed to be easier, but it's not.
Do not get me started.
I think that's a good transition to our next topic, though, because it was supposed to get easier, and for Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg is such a fascinating topic, I think, because here's a team that had done a lot of things right, I feel, in the transfer window last summer, right? They were able to hold on to Lacroix, who was heavily linked to Leipzig, and They held on to Weghorst. They brought in some good names, Waldschmidt, Luke Bacchio, Lucas Nemcha, who has since become a German national team player. Felix Nemcha, who looks like he's going to become a German national team player very soon as well. And Sebastian Bornau, and just the fact that they kept everyone together. And I feel like they've done everything right in terms of transfers. But, here's the big but, they also signed Mark van Bommel with Jörg Schmadtke essentially kicking out Oliver Glasner, because Jörg Schmadtke is a great sporting director, but he has a history of not getting along with his head coaches. This is something that also happened in Köln, right? And Marcel Schäfer, of course, was the Schmuck is the director of sport. Marcel Schäfer is the sporting director. Those are two different titles. I know they sound very similar, but they're different. And I feel like they did a lot of things right, but that head coaching decision at the time, and they were pretty heavily criticized for it, Stefan, has massively backfired for them at Van Bommel getting fired. He didn't even manage to count the amount of players, right, that he used for substitutions in the DFB Pokal. And this is like, help me out here, because I don't understand it. Some people in Germany really rate Florian Kohfeldt highly. I don't see it. And when they signed him, I thought, okay, well, maybe I was wrong. But they've now been winless in 9 games. They haven't won a game since November. And they are on the brink of a relegation spot. Do you understand this, Stefan?
No, none of it makes any sense. But in terms of Kohfeldt, you know, we've talked about this in the podcast for the last couple of months now, in terms of how there's this concept in German Bundesliga that, you know, their head coaches are the best, and the next Jurgen Klopp is just around the corner. And, you know, I think Kohfeldt's an example of that, where they just keep getting more and more chances, which is fair enough. But for a club like Wolfsburg, who have spent a huge amount of money, they've got very talented and well-paid professionals. They have players who have high expectations to do well at Wolfsburg. You know, and, you know, Wolfsburg's such a peculiar club. I thought Stefan Rosfeld did a really good article on this for ESPN maybe a year ago, sometime during the pandemic, so my timeline's all over the place. But, you know, he did a really good piece explaining how the town is just kind of like this forgotten place in Germany, and how you arrive and it's so bizarrely put together, and you have the huge Volkswagen factory. And I actually really enjoyed the place, but, you know, it's kind of, and then, you know, he made the joke in the article that sometimes people commuting to and from Berlin, the train will sometimes forget to even stop there. So,
it's true. I have experienced that.
Yeah. So, you know, and obviously that rubs off on the club itself. For any ambitious player, we've seen this through the years. We've seen this with Julian Draxler. We've seen this with Kevin De Bruyne. Countless others. You know, you can do very well at Wolfsburg, and then it gets you a job somewhere else. And it only lasts so long. And the problem with Wolfsburg, I think, is that they had a coach in Glasner who had managed to pull that squad together, get them playing the right way, get them playing together. And, you know, the ambitions between the head coach and the players fitted. They then tried to bring in Mark van Bommel, who his coaching experience was simply inadequate. Maybe the idea behind it was he was a big name, he was a big personality, the players would respect him because of his playing career, but it became very evident very quickly that he didn't really have any of his own coaching ideas. He was still relying on Glasner's tactics, Glasner's player selections. And when things kind of started to wobble a bit, he had no idea what to do. Now, maybe they've decided, look, we're going to go in opposite direction. We're going to bring in a young, exciting German coach, and maybe he can galvanize the players, but it hasn't worked. And the thing that I find really interesting about Wolfsburg over this kind of run, because they've now gone 9 games without picking up a win, is that they're just not creating any chances whatsoever. So, you know, I jotted down some numbers here, and over the course of the last 9 games, their XG, which of course is, you know, a numerical value we put on how many goals they should have scored, was 13.04, which isn't great, but it's not that bad. But in that same period of time, they only scored 5 goals. So they're obviously quite unlucky in front of goal. They're not. They're creating chances. They certainly did create chances against Leipzig, but they're not really scoring them. And I thought it was quite telling that in the 9 games before this bad run, their XG was 12.15, so it was almost exactly the same. But they scored 8 goals, which again is not great, but it's still almost twice as many as this current run. And that then led to, instead of nine games without a win, in that previous run, they had four wins, one draw, and then they picked up four defeats as well. But, you know, there's a huge difference there with four wins and not four wins. But everything this season has been on these tightest of margins. And it's just not looking good for Cofield. We were talking beforehand about, it was a big piece in Kicker today about the talk about what could happen. So after the break, they've got Greuther Fürth, to, you know, a team that most clubs in the Bundesliga would expect to pick up 3 points from. Schmadtke said, look, we have to win that game. And I think the kind of general idea is that if they don't win that game, Cofield could be out. Or even worse, looking down the line, there could be a full kind of clear out top to bottom in guys like Schmadtke or Schaefer, who is also alongside him. I can't remember if he's the managing director or the director of sport. But, you know, the whole thing could get cleared out. And then you could even then expand that to the team itself, where a number of the key players, star players, are probably already planning on leaving in the summer.
I see. That last part, I'm not sure that's actually going to do anything, because I don't think the squad is the issue. And this is one of those cases that you often say, okay, well, if the quality isn't there, the coach can't do anything. But the quality is obviously there. I don't think we were that wrong in our judgment ahead of the season to say that this is a very good squad. You look up and down the players that they have and some of the players that they brought in, and I'm doubling down on this because I really strongly believe in this. This is a very, very good squad. This is a top four squad, Stefan. And that gets me thinking, okay, if it's not the squad, then the problem is sitting on the bench. And I firmly believe that it was first from Bommel. And I remember following the Kofeld story really closely at Bremen. And, you know, he very much lived on the fact that he made them survive in his first year in the Bundesliga. And there was a lot of hype about him. And he's a very nice guy. And sometimes that's enough for a coach to survive, because the media, if you're good with the media likes you, they will back you, right? Now, as for the changes, I think that you're playing Fürth. That's 3 points. If it's not 3 points, I don't know what you're doing. You know, you and I could coach Wolfsburg and get 3 points against Fürth. And which makes me think, honestly, what are they doing? You now have 2 weeks where you could make a significant change to your club and turn around the fortunes. And it's still early enough. The way the Bundesliga is, you could put 4, 5, 6, 7 wins in a row together and climb up the table, right? And I think that if I was in charge — I'm not, but if I was in charge — I would pull the trigger. I would fire the head coach and I would bring in someone else. I would bring in someone like Niko Kovac, someone who's familiar with the system that they're playing. You see that with Glasner, the way he's doing at Frankfurt. And the way Frankfurt played today is still very much a system and a tactic that was fundamentally put in place by Kovac years ago, right? So I would see that as a good fit. I don't think Kovac is a world beater, but he will get it fundamentally right with the squad. And this is the opportunity for you to do it. And I think wasting this 2-week window would be a massive mistake. It would be a huge mistake. And essentially, you're not wasting just this 2-week window. You're also wasting the week after, because I'm going to say this right now, they are going to beat Fürth. Right? So I don't know. I think what's happening here is Schmadtke and Schaefer are probably doubling down on their guy, because they have to have this one right, because the next coach that's getting hired is not going to be hired by them. That's my thinking anyways.
The question, I think Niko Kovac would be a great idea, because you could obviously say to him, look, you come in, you help us avoid relegation, as silly as it sounds, and then you've got that whole summer to build your squad. And you're absolutely right about this Wolfsburg team. They could lose 2 or 3 star players in the summer and they'd still have more than enough talent to finish in the top four next season. And especially to have a guy like Niko Kovac, who I still think is a fantastic head coach. He's still very young, obviously, but I think he's a little hardly done by at Bayern Munich. I'm not even entirely sure he deserved to lose his job at Monaco either. He was doing a good job there last season. Obviously, what he did at Frankfurt speaks for itself. So I think he'd be a great appointment. I'm just not sure, because of what's happened this season, that they can hire anyone else or anyone of that kind of stature, you know, to maybe transition if we want. I'm of the understanding that they did go speaking to other head coaches before they brought Cofield in. You know, I'm of the understanding they actually went for Domenico Tedesco before he ended up at Leipzig, and that didn't work out. And you can understand why, because maybe a head coach with ambition and maybe a bit of foresight looks at that squad of players and thinks, Cofield is probably doing all he can and those players simply don't care. So why would they care about me 2 months before the end of a season when half of them probably plan on moving clubs? So it might be very hard for Wolfsburg to bring in a proper head coach this season. And they may have to stick with Cofield and hope that they avoid relegation. And then maybe they can tempt a better head coach in the summer.
That's such a beautiful transition, Stefan. Because someone did end up getting Tedesco, and our club Leipzig, and we talked about them on the top of the show. They do look like a team. I personally think they will finish top four. I think I said that in the beginning when they first hired him, and they're closing that gap very quickly, right? They're now sixth, just 3 points behind Union Berlin. And let's be honest here, they will keep winning. And they will keep winning enough to be ahead of the two teams in front of them, Freiburg and Union Berlin. And now they're the only big team left in the Pokal. Like, if they finish top four and they win a title at the end of the year, they'd be celebrating there.
Oh, right? Without a doubt. Wolfsburg. Leipzig have played a masterstroke here. Obviously, things didn't work out with Jesse Marsh. They tried to give him as much time as they could, but eventually they said, look, we have to act now. And they did. They acted when, you know, they felt the perfect time to do so. And it meant that Tedesco came in. He was able to have a winter break. I mean, I know he picked up points even before that. Mm-hmm. Although, interestingly enough, the one team to have actually beaten his Leipzig side are Arminia Bielefeld, of all clubs, which is just so bizarre. But since they came back from that winter break, they've been incredible. They thumped Mainz. They've thumped Stuttgart. They beat Hansa Rostock in the Pokal. Okay, fair enough. And in that Wolfsburg game at the weekend, Wolfsburg were quite good. They were doing quite well up until maybe halftime.
Yeah.
Tedesco then brings on some extra weight. He brings on some extra talent. Dani Olmo looked tremendous, looked back to his best. And Leipzig just kind of pulled away. And it just seems to be, this is exactly probably what, you know, the higher-ups at Leipzig were thinking. This is what should have happened at the start of the season. Nagelsmann, very good coach, don't get us wrong, possibly one of the most talented ones in Europe, but they have this overwhelming quality in every position at Leipzig where any half-decent coach should be able to get in that machine ticking along, and that's what Tedesco has done. I thought it was really, really interesting. He kind of, this just popped into my head there, but he gave an interview after the Wolfsburg game and he said, you know, because he was asked about changing things and how much work he's put in. And he said when he inherited the squad from Jesse Marsh, he didn't mention Jesse Marsh, but he said when he arrived at the club, he identified 20 problems with the squad, the way they played, the tactics, et cetera, et cetera. And he believes he's fixed 16 of them now and there's still another four to go. So it's going to be it's going to be really interesting to see just how much they can push on now, because the really interesting thing, of course, is that when we come back from this break, they then go to Munich to play Bayern Munich. And then, you know, that might be a really good measure of this team, but either way or another, I think Leipzig fans can probably be quite happy and relieved to think they're probably going to finish the season quite strongly. They could end up winning the German Cup and then Tedesco has a whole summer to even start doing his work properly.
And you see the players that were brought in last summer now fulfilling the potential that we always thought that they would have. Andre Silva is a great example. I think he's got five of his 8 goals under Tedesco. Guardiola was excellent on the weekend. He was a defender who I thought, why are we worried about Upamecano and Mukiele leaving. No, sorry, not Mukiele. The God, Konate. Sorry about that. Konate leaving because Guardiola and Simakan are coming in, and those two have been good ever since Tedesco's come in. They seem much more comfortable. They seem to really have shored up that back line. You saw that against Wolfsburg, right? And Guardiola scored in that game. Silva had an assist. And I think that's really, really telling. And you know who I thought was really excellent was Yusuf Poulsen. But it's not just him. You know, it's all the other guys that we had so much promise. Szoboszlai, right? Szoboszlai, Olmo, all these guys all seem to slightly improve and consistently improve. And it really even seems like that Moriba is getting a more of a chance now as well, right? And he was a bit of an issue. And Jesse Marsch as well. So you're seeing this stuff. You're just seeing that all coming in.
Could I add one more to that? I think it's made a huge difference is Andre Silva's goal scoring.
Yeah.
He went, you know, one of the biggest kind of factors for Jesse Marsch was that he just couldn't get Andre Silva scoring goals. I think he scored one in his first five or six games, and it led to Marsch actually dropping him from the team, and he lost his starting space for a while. Since Tedesco's came in, he's picked up five goals in, I think, six games in the Bundesliga. You know, so, he's getting the best out of their best players, which at Leipzig is a team on its day that should be challenging for titles.
Yeah, and they might. They might just do that. You know, as I said, they win the Pokal. I think it's happy days there. And that will be their first ever trophy. And I think when you first thought the first half of the season, it looked like a setback for them. But if they get back into the Champions League and they win a trophy, they will say, okay, well, Marsch was a mistake. That didn't work out. Happens, right? But as we were able to fix it, right away bring in another guy. And our projections was back on track. And if they win a title and they keep the squad together next year, you know, I have to admit I was a little bit wrong about Tedesco as well. I thought it was an interesting appointment, and I maybe based it too much on what happened in Schalke in the second season, right? But I actually kind of come to the terms that it is a pretty good fit, because it does kind of, he's more Nagelsmann than Marsch is in his defensive approach and his more tactical approach and analytical approach. The things, like as you said in the interview, when he went in, he identified the problems and then he almost mechanical worked through them and fixed them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe that works better there.
Yeah, and that's kind of probably what you want if you're a fan of the league and you're looking for a team to really make a step up and challenge Bayern. You want a Leipzig head coach who knows how to set a team up, who knows how to defend properly, and he knows how to frustrate. That's obviously what Nagelsmann did for the best part when he really did manage to get the best against Bayern. And, you know, as I said on this podcast a week or two ago, this team obviously has so much attacking talent in it that he probably doesn't have to do a huge amount in terms of getting them to score goals. He just gets the basics right. You can tell when you do watch them, they are very much focusing on their defensive football and making sure they get that correct. And, you know, if you watch that Wolfsburg game, or even if you just watch the highlights, players are throwing themselves in front of the ball to stop Wolfsburg from scoring. It's great to see, because obviously the league needs kind of league challengers. It needs teams like Leipzig to really take a chunk out of Bayern. So it'll be really, really interesting. I'm very, very excited about that game after the break and we get back to it.
Yeah, I am too. And I mean, in all honesty, one of the two biggest investments that they made was in defense with Guardiola and Simakan, right? So you do hope that investment pays off. And I think the Bayern game is going to be very interesting. And obviously, and we're going to talk about this in a moment, Bayern dealing, you know, whenever Bayern seemed to have sort of calmed everything down, like they got through their COVID outbreak relatively well, I would say, right? They lost their game against Gladbach, which they would have probably lost anyways because the thick boogie team. And so I don't think COVID was actually the biggest factor here. And they were very good against Hertha on the weekend. I thought just a fantastic performance all around. It was so, I mean, first of all, Hertha were garbage. You know, I don't like to be this rude about it, but it's true. They were terrible. There was that I think it was the fourth goal that they scored, that Sané scored, where that was Regionalliga level defending. You know, you would get probably kicked out of your peer league team if you defended like that. And that's just very disappointing. I mean, there's another club for me who is just so poorly run, and the head coaching decisions make no sense. But that's maybe a topic for a podcast down the road. But Bayern looked really good, and Bayern looked really good the match day before. And they're probably also looking very good right now, because we're not going to talk much about Dortmund today. I don't think there's much to add to what we had, but Dortmund are getting the results that keep Bayern on their toes. And so all of a sudden, Dortmund, of course, playing Leverkusen. There's going to be a big weekend when we come back. Bayern Dortmund against Leverkusen on Sunday. And then, of course, the top spiel is Bayern Munich against Leipzig on the Saturday. It's going to be an interesting weekend because, of course, if Bayern drop points there, which they could, Dortmund win, which is not a given because it's against Leverkusen, that gap could then shrink from the 6 to maybe 4 or just 3. And I think that's interesting because it keeps Bayern on their toes at the moment. And there's some big news coming out of the Bayern camp this week. Or actually today. It was really funny that yesterday, Herbert Heiner, so we were recording on Monday, Sunday was the interview, right, following the Hertha game. Herbert Heiner said they made a contract offer to Niklas Süle. And that's been going on for a long time. This has been an issue for a long time. It has really looked like he's not going to renew for a long time as well. And today the reports, and this has been confirmed to me, it looks like he is not going to sign a new contract there, which means he's going to leave on a free transfer. Chelsea and Newcastle, heavily linked. Barcelona is sniffing around there too. I have no idea where Barcelona is going to find that money, Stefan. I think they will have to rob a bank first. But yeah, I guess that is, I think Bayern will probably find a replacement pretty easily. They're just going to get, Christensen is really heavily linked, who's sitting on the bench mostly at Chelsea, right? And they kind of need a backup defender anyways. And Antonio Rüdiger is another one. That would also make sense to bring home a German national team player to play for Bayern. I think that would suit them quite well. So I think that's an interesting one. But what did you make of the Süle story? Because seems like he's definitely gone now.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I thought it was quite hilarious the way that it came out. And yeah. obviously someone in, well, not obviously at all, actually. This is a total guesswork in my part. But it seemed to me as though someone within Sula's camp obviously broke the news or leaked the information to Bild, because the story came out almost as a direct reaction to Heiner's comments on Sunday, because not only did Bild say that he's not signed a new contract, but they made a specific reference to the fact that Süle was bamboozled by Heiner's comments, because as far as Süle was as far as he was concerned, according to Bild, the club already knew for some time that he wasn't going to sign a new contract. So it's really interesting. I actually don't think he'll be as easy to replace as, you know, you've suggested there, because I think Süle is, on his day, I think he's a tremendous defender.
I agree.
I think when he's fit, I think he's pushing for a starting role in that Bayern team. I think he offers something different from some other players in that team. And if you take him out of that squad and you assume that Nagelsmann wants to stick with his back three, he's really, really struggling to kind of fill the spaces. He obviously has Lucas Hernandez, Upamecano, Nianzu, and then obviously you have Benjamin Pavard, who's been playing at centre-back. Now, that might look fine on paper, but what you have to remember is that Nianzu is a very young player. He's only just kind of coming into the game. Some of his performances this season have suggested he's still very inconsistent, still very inexperienced. Benjamin Pavard, who may say, look, I'd rather play centre-back at this point in my career, he's also a full-back at times as well. He's not, maybe wouldn't go so far as to say he's a dependable central defender. Lucas Hernandez is another one who I think probably is Bayern's best central defender at this point. And I think he probably is a good one on his day. I think, and I think he's actually been quite good this season, don't get me wrong, but he's obviously another player who has moved around a number of positions in that team. And then you have Upamecano, who still very raw, still very young. Nagelsmann actually made a point of criticising him after the game because he basically gave away a consolation goal. So there are issues with that Bayern defence. And the thing about Sulla is that, as I said on Twitter, I think it'd be hard for Bayern to replace because he's basically too good to be a bench warmer for Bayern, which is exactly why he's leaving. But what that also means is if they were to find someone who's just as good as him, that player would also probably demand to be starting, just like Sulla was, and why Sulla's now leaving. And I think for Bayern to actually properly replace him, they probably would have to bring in a Christensen, they probably would have to bring in a Rudiger. Zachariah has been linked, but I cannot see Bayern bringing Zachariah to the club just to play central defence. I don't think that would make sense long term. Yeah. But the issue is, if they do go all out and bring in a Rudiger or a Christensen in the summer, that's a player who's probably going to be demanding just as much as Sulla was requiring, and also probably demanding the same amount of playing time. So whoever they do bring in to replace Sulla, unless it is a young player, another young player maybe, I think it's going to force Nagelsmann to really have to kind of shuffle that defence around and keep everyone happy. Unless, as someone suggested to me on Twitter, they should just go out and get Matthijs Ginter, which I thought was quite a funny suggestion. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. The only other thing I'd maybe add to this is that I know Sulla has been linked to Barcelona, he's been linked to Newcastle, he's been linked to Chelsea. I think he's also linked to Manchester United at one point. The one team who should really go out and try and sign Sulla now, I think, are Borussia Dortmund. I think he'd be the perfect signing for them. He'd be the perfect long-term replacement for Mats Hummels, in my opinion. Give him whatever they're paying Hummels. And, you know, that's a player there who on his day is as good a defender as anyone in Germany. He has experience. He has the drive. He has the expectation from playing as a Bayern Munich player. He's exactly, in my opinion, the kind of player that can take Dortmund to the next level and really become proper title challengers. And I don't just mean because of his actual physical ability, which I know is quite debatable at times, whether he's really is a top-class defender or not. But he obviously has that air and that expectation of quite a classy player, of quite a player who obviously holds himself to very high standards. And I do sometimes wonder if that's lacking at Dortmund, especially in defence. So whether they could afford him or not, I think they probably could, to be honest with you. But
yeah, they could.
I'm not suggesting for a minute that's where he's going. And I don't think it's likely, but I would be really, really interested. I'd be very impressed if Dortmund could pull off that signing.
Tomorrow on Twitter, Steffen Biankowski is linking Niklas Süle to Borussia Dortmund. Heard it here first. I would love it. I think his Premier League ambitions will get in the way of this, but I would love it. I think it'd be great for the league because it also would destroy a bunch of narratives because he is Borussia Dortmund signing a free transfer from Bayern Munich, right? A German national team defender. A defender who I think that came across a little bit wrong earlier. I actually rate him really highly. I think he goes to the Premier League. He becomes one of the top five defenders in the Premier League instantly because they don't have anyone like him there. He's so fast. That's the thing. People, this is why I always laugh when you see these old guys, old English commentators, like, oh yeah, he's a very slow guy. It's like, he's in the top five of the fastest players in the Bundesliga every year. He's incredibly fast. And he can actually turn this 220-pound body on a dime, which is incredible as well. You don't see that with players his weight category and size category that often, that they're also extremely mobile. Like, he's very mobile. There's this one clip where he does like the Zidane move, right? Playing as a right back and completely out sprinting guys. This is a side of him that is not often seen. And I think that makes him instantly one of the best defenders in that league.
Do you know who he always reminds? Did you ever watch the show Futurama when you were younger?
Yeah.
Do you remember the character Zap Brannigan? The kind of like Captain Kirk kind of parody. He has this quite disparaging comment that he's making about, actually he's talking about a spaceship, but he's obviously meant to be making a joke about sleeping with a woman. But it's a quote that I always laugh at because I think it perfectly summed up Niklas Sulla. And it's when he says, you know, in reference to the ship he's driving, he says, you know, she looks like a steakhouse, but she handles like a bistro, in the sense that, like, you know, it's a very, very big ship, but it's obviously very, it's very nimble. And I think that sums up Nicholas Sulla perfectly, because the guy is the size of a wardrobe, but yeah. When you watch him play, he plays like Alfonso Davies sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I'd be really, if obviously it'd be great to see him at Dortmund, but it'd be really interesting to see how he did in the Premier League, because he obviously has all the physical attributes to really excel there.
What I think is interesting with Niklas Süle, he is with Volker Struth's agency, Sports 360. Mm. And there's history there, because obviously Dayot Upamecano was also with them, yep. And that worked out. But Timo Werner Hasan Salihamidžić's negotiations with Timo Werner and the agency don't exactly went smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And that I find interesting what's happening right now.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting last summer when that Upamecano story, in fact, not last summer, it was in January, wasn't it, when the deal was going through. I find it really interesting that Upamecano's agent was in there negotiating with Bayern when he was probably then the very next day sitting down with Nicholas Sulla discussing his Bayern Munich future with him, because basically Upamecano has stepped in and is probably taking game time from Sulla. And if you want to kind of, and you can completely understand why after that summer transfer window, Sulla has decided, look, you know what, if Bayern were going to really offer me a starting role in this team, they probably wouldn't have signed Upamecano. They would have offered me that position to step into Jerome Boateng's position, and they would have let me become that player. But they've signed Upamecano instead, and because he costs so much money, Bayern are basically beholden to playing Upamecano and developing him. And I'm sure he will go on to become a great player, but he's probably been Bayern's worst defender this season in terms of performances, in terms of mistakes. Nagelsmann really doesn't shy away from the fact that he has a lot to learn in his game. And sure, Bayern Munich can get away with it in the Bundesliga because they usually beat teams by 3 or 4 goals anyway. But we've seen him really struggle in the Champions League. We've seen him really struggle against Erling Haaland in the classicers, if you want to call it that.
Mm.
It'll be really interesting if next season Sulla leaves and obviously Nagelsmann is stuck with Upamecano. If these mistakes continue to happen, if they happen in very high stake games, it'd be interesting to see if, obviously Nagelsmann would never admit this publicly, but it'd be interesting to see if Bayern Munich fans start to wonder, you know, if we had Sulla in that position, would that have happened? Because they are different players. And if there's one thing you can say about Sulla, I think he always looks so calm on the ball. He's always so composed on the ball. He's almost the opposite of Upamecano in that regard. He always looks so concerned and so worried. I honestly think he'd be a huge miss for Bayern. I think... I don't think they really appreciate that. Maybe they do. They did offer him a contract. They did offer him a pay rise. But the way that he's been kind of pushed to the side this season for other players, I think is they might regret that.
Yeah, and there's always been a narrative as well, right, around Sulle, in that he's not professional. He doesn't do weight training, doesn't watch his weight. Tore his ACL twice, right, which for a big guy is obviously a concern. Being of a similar height and weight class to Niklas Süle and having torn my ACL, I know that one of the things I had to watch right after is the weight, because that joint is better off when you put less weight on it. That's just a fact. You know, knees are a very mobile, complicated part of your body. I learned this the hard way. And knowing too that, like, I had to extremely watch my weight for doing sport ever since, because it's just so difficult. And this is one of the things that they always kind of held against him, that he didn't do that, right? Because, like, they worried that he's like one ACL injury or one bad turn away from suffering that injury again, which of course complicated things. And Bayern Munich is still scarred from the whole Holger Badstuber situation, right? A super promising defender. Maybe one of the most talented defenders German football ever had, but his ACL injuries definitely torpedoed his career. And so I think they were always, Bayern Munich always have a long memory about things. They don't like to repeat mistakes. So I think they were pretty scarred from that. And maybe that's also flowing into this here, that they're just worried that his lifestyle will lead to another long-term injury and then he's a sunk cost. Maybe. I don't know. It's something to keep in mind. It's an interesting one. I think it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up and how they are going to end up replacing him. You know, Christensen is a name, Frutica was another. I'm with you, Zakaria. I can't see it. That'd be kind of weird. Maybe final one for today, Stefan.
Could I make one final point on?
Yeah, Sulu go before? For it.
All I would add to that is that the interesting thing I think coming up for the summer is that from a German national team point of view, there are three probably most dependable central defenders, assuming Mats Hummels doesn't return to the national team. Niklas Sulla, Antonio Rudiger, Matthias Ginter, all three out of contract, all three potentially moving clubs, and all three possibly having huge changes to their career. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out between now and the World Cup, because you may have a situation where Sulla moves to the Premier League, he's having a very good job of it. Matthias Ginter maybe moves to a team in Spain. He could potentially end up at Barcelona, for all we know. And Antonio Rudiger could end up at Bayern Munich. So that, I'm sure Hansi Flick will be watching the summer transfer window very carefully, because his entire team could depend on where those three players move in the summer.
Yeah, it is interesting. The Qatar World Cup always escapes me.
Yeah, I try not to think about it, to be honest.
No, I looked into the accreditation process last night and I will probably get accredited for it, but I'm not really looking forward to it. It's just such a weird time of the year to go there, and I just don't feel any World Cup vibe. It's supposed to be a World Cup year and I'm feeling nothing. It's just emptiness. Which is kind of strange. I always got really excited for World Cups, including the last one, because that was the first one I covered full time. So I'm not feeling that for this one. But yeah, like maybe final point, because we did have that as a topic last week, was the so-called ghost games, Geisterspiele, right, in German football. And surprisingly, Bavaria's minister president, Markus Söder, who previously was always against ghost games, has now said he's against them. It's an election in Bavaria this year, Stefan. I think he's feeling the heat. So he's pushing for games to be played with attendance, some sort of attendance, and a federal decision. But for now, the federal government has decided that they're going to postpone that decision. There's going to be a Länderrat, which is like the different states or provinces, which is like the closest translation, coming together, the heads of the different states and provinces coming together on February 9th to decide what to do further with stadiums. And then a week after that is going to be brought in. And that's important because like that means like next match day is going to be what it is now. The match day after that, we could see some changes, which would be hopefully positive. And that's, of course, also the peak of the Omicron wave in Germany. And I'm reading this all from the Süddeutsche Zeitung, in case you're wondering where I'm getting this from. I'm having it in front of me because it's a long list of decisions made today. A long list of decisions made that actually bring no change whatsoever, but still. it looks like the Omicron wave is going to hit, the peak of it's going to hit Germany in early February. And knowing how it is here, we are past the Omicron wave peak now. The numbers drop quickly after that, and relaxations of rules are also very quickly. So maybe in February we'll have stadium fans back in stadiums. And I tell you what, if Söder pushes for it, you lived in Germany, you know how Germany works, Stefan. When Bavaria says something is going to happen one way, then it's only a matter of time for the rest of them to do it, because if they don't do it, Bavaria will just do it anyways. Fingers crossed, we'll get attendance back soon.
Yeah. Only thing I'll really add to this, because we talked before we recorded this episode and we agreed that there's no point in either of us ranting about how stupid these rules are and the limitations on football, because we've done that already. The followers and our listeners know how we feel about it. All I would add is that after the news that nothing was changing, Hans-Joachim Watzke was very, very critical of it. And he said, people are locked out in the open. That's not proportionate. That's not science either. No one understands that anymore. And then he said, there were always complaints that soccer was getting special rights in Germany. The opposite is just the case. Soccer is becoming the victim of symbolic politics. And I think he made a really good point there. And I think that's really interesting. So it'd be really interesting to watch and see how what happens here. Whether, because if Bayern and Dortmund are both agreed that this isn't fair, then as we know, when the two of them lock horns or lock arms with something with German football, it usually forces the rest to kind of fall into line. So, yeah, hopefully we'll have fans back in the stadiums because, you know, I was talking to Kevin Hartchart about this on Twitter today, who's obviously one of the very good commentators for the World Feed. I'm sure our listeners have listened to him many times wherever you are in the world. I think we were agreeing that the Bundesliga, more than just about any other major league, really suffers when it doesn't have the fans because they are one of the main selling points, if not the number one, when it comes to the Bundesliga. So hopefully they can get back in as soon as possible.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And of course, maybe to add one tiny tidbit, Oliver Kahn, the CEO of Bayern Munich, had a meeting with Karl Lauterbach, the, I guess it's the equivalent of the, he's the health minister, minister of health, right? And the main decision maker behind this, who has been very critical towards the Bundesliga at times, to a level where I think it's actually populist. And they have agreed on what Lauterbach called a second leg. So we'll see. I know from past experiences that even though these decisions are made, they're not set in stone. They could be decisions made before February. And as you said, once Bayern and Dortmund get behind something, that does have significant pull. Because these are the two most popular teams in the two most popular states of the country. And they will not do something without knowing a thing or two, right? And that's how decisions made in, on the federal level in Germany. It's the it's based on what the most popular the states with the most population in the end of the day decide have the biggest weight, right? In the federal mechanisms that we have in the country governing the way the country is governed. So interesting times. We'll see. Hopefully by the time the next podcast comes around, we're all going on an international break too. I'm excited for that kind of, Stefan. I need a break every once in a while. You know, still, of course, unfortunately for me, it's also during deadline day. So I guess the break is a little bit different this time than it usually is, but it's still a weekend where I can sleep in. So I'm looking forward to that. And, and we'll be back with a podcast, of course, after the international break is over and we had like a full of match day. But until then, anything you want to point your listeners to? Otherwise, we're just going to give this a wrap.
Not really, just to go subscribe to my newsletter. It's free. I say it all the time in the podcast. I'm sure listeners are sick of hearing about it, but it will be out this Wednesday, so you can have a listen to it, a read of it rather, for free then. So keep an eye on Twitter for that.
Awesome stuff. Yeah, give it, check it out. And also, please give us a rating or rate this podcast. 5 stars, please. Or 3 or 2 or 1 if you don't like us, but then they're probably not listening. But give us a rating. That really helps. And yeah, until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.